Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound means. It means it's episode 168 of Personal Arrogance Podcast, brought to you by the Bald Move Network. I am one of your hosts. My name is Eric Walquist, and I just spilled a beer all over my shorts.
Good work.
Thank you.
I'm Jesse. I'm not a pirate. I'm a hooligan Wilson.
Not a pirate. You're a hooligan. Very hooligan-y of you. You know, only a pirate would say something like that.
That's the catch 22. Did you hear about those Greenpeace? The Greenpeace 30?
No.
They got arrested for trying to board a Russian oil platform.
Uh-huh.
And they got arrested by the Russian government. And they were initially charged with piracy. But it got bumped down to hooliganism.
It's arrested development.
You could make a Arrested Development episode about that.
This is the story of a man who had to keep his family together because they were eco-terrorists.
Did you just call Greenpeace eco-terrorists?
I don't know what I called them. Oh, man. Jesse, how was your week?
We just lost all our Greenpeace
listeners. Just lost every single Greenpeace list. It was like 59% of our audience. I've been looking at the demographics.
I have a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
boat trips up to to the Arctic Circle and, you know, chaining yourself to a nuclear power plant and everything.
Sitting up in a tree.
Yeah, a lot of podcast opportunities. God.
Yeah, so I hit the play button on the music here and then I took a swig of my beer and then my beer said, "I'm so excited to be drank and I'm going to go everywhere." And then came all the way out the top and then volcanoed.
Yeah.
I don't understand why some beers do this, some beers don't do it.
Oh, there's a lot of factors. What type of beer is it? Let's get into what are you drinking.
Yeah, what are you drinking? This week, I'm drinking the Full Sail Wassail Winter Seasonal. Full Sail, I think my favorite brewery of 2013. They're killing it, man. Their LTD series right now is a Black Bock, which I really want to try. But this is their Wassail. Delicious. I also got to try some Slayer this weekend, and I really enjoyed that. It's winter seasonal season, baby. Slayer's good this year.
See, I had the Jubilee Ale, and I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I'm just Jubilee Ale. Not a huge Jubilee Ale fan in general.
I'm not a huge Jubilee Ale fan either, and that's weird because we're such big fans of Deschutes.
Right.
And we love Twilight, and, you know, it's
the movie.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I don't know. Jubilee Ale just never really does it for me. I had it this year, and it wasn't undrinkable, which it has been in past years.
Yeah, it's totally serviceable, but I don't know. Just not my thing. But to answer your question, usually when you get a gusher, it's because it's a bottle-fermented beverage. Mm. But it's always a pressure thing. So all bottles and all packaged beers pressurize for a variety of reasons. It's usually around, like, 15 pounds. But if, for whatever reason, it's overpressurized, which could be equipment failure or it could be the guy left the pressure on the tank too long,
right.
It got too high, it can just become too pressurized. And then when you pop the top, it equalizes, so to speak.
Well, see, this didn't happen when I popped the top. This happened when I drank it for, like, my third sip.
So and also, like, sometimes when you, if you put it down too hard, you know how, like, if you clink the top of someone's beer, it makes it foam? Because the CO2 literally just got shaken out of the solution and shoots upwards to freedom and onto your shorts.
Well, I know what my kid's doing for their first science project. No, we're skipping right past the vinegar and baking soda. We're going straight to the beer volcano.
It's the same reason when you shake up a beer, you know, all that CO2 just got released and then it goes.
Jesse, what are you drinking this week?
I haven't actually cracked it open yet, but I got the Alaskan Free Rider APA.
Oh, I love that. I really enjoy that.
You know, the thing is, so I went to Safeway because there was the threat of a grocery worker strike.
Right.
And I was like, oh, God, I need to buy beer. Otherwise, I'll only have my homebrew and all the free beer I get from work, which is an infinite amount, but I still panicked.
Okay. The beer panic of 2013.
Yeah. So I was like, I'll get a variety one. So I'll have a variety of different flavors. I got the Alaskan one, and it's like, It comes with the amber, the wit, something else, and brewer's choice. I was like, oh, I really like the Alaskan winter brewed with spruce tips. That must be what's in there. Mm-hmm. Got it home, Free Rider APA.
Which I think was their summer seasonal, or maybe even their spring seasonal.
Yeah, I want to say it was their summer, but yeah. So I felt a little ripped off about that.
you can't squabble over the brewer's choice, dude. It is the brewer's choice.
That's a good point.
It didn't say
accurate seasonal. It did say brewer's choice.
And it's your fault for buying a sampler pack.
I don't hate sampler packs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me about that when you get the Sam Adams cherry blueberry sour.
The Sam Adams sampler pack has a disgusting option.
The worst.
It's tradition.
I am very excited about these winter seasonals that are rolling out. I haven't seen Celebration Ale, which is always a perennial favorite for me. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, keep my eyes peeled. Celebrations usually release later in the season.
Yeah. One time I was at this happened like a few years ago. I was picking up a six-pack after work, and I used to work right next to a Safeway. So I go to the Safeway, and I look in the beer aisle, and I go, what? And I grab the Celebration Ale, because it was the first time I saw it that year. Uh-huh. And then this guy was like standing there, and he goes, well, I guess I'll get that one.
That's hilarious.
All right. Well, I'm going to dedicate this show. I don't know. Do you have a dedication? Don't want to step on your dado. I'm going to dedicate this show to the United States phone system.
Oh, yeah?
For bringing beautiful voices to our ears each and every week. And this week, we got quite a few of them.
That's not a thing.
The phone system. It's a thing. You drive down the street, there's a bunch of phone lines everywhere.
I don't think it's called the United States phone system.
Well, it should be. And, it is phone system day, after all. It's also Mole Day. We're recording this on Mole Day, 10/23. And it also is our buddy Jordy's birthday.
Yeah.
So happy birthday to Jordy.
Covered in moles, he is.
He is. He's very moly. And he's also covered in Mexican chocolate sauce. Anyway.
Wow.
We got a slew of voicemails this week, so we're going to start it off. And, oh, God, Texas, you just love to call us, don't you? Or we're going to start it off in Texas. Here we go.
Guys, you wanted a drunk dial. Boy, do I have a drunk dial for you right now. This is Sean. Oh, I'm getting another call. Anyways, sorry to let you down. The drunk dials are cut short. By the way, I wasn't the guy that said, get off my back first, like you said last time. But I was the guy that said, get off my Scott Bakula. So, guys, stay arrogant. Get off my Scott Bakula.
Sean from Texas. Get off my Scott Bakula. Man, now I'm really curious what he wanted to call us about. I wish that he would call us back. Oh, wait, what's this?
Guys, it's Sean from Fort Worth again. Sorry, my wife was calling to see what I wanted from In-N-Out. She's buying me In-N-Out on her way home. But guess what? She wouldn't be buying me any hamburgers if she knew I drank the last of her chain breaker. And you know what? I didn't even realize Chain Breaker was from Deschutes. Eric's favorite brewery. That's pretty cool. Can't believe we can get it down here in Fort Worth, Texas. Anyways, can you guys guess what I do for a living? I make salsa. Get off my back. Bye.
Wow. I love it when we get to know our listeners a little better. And now I know who to talk to if I have any salsa questions. Josh, thank you for following the protocol and bringing us a drunk dial. I think we actually have, interestingly enough, another drunk dial from Texas. So Texas really knocking it out of the park this week with drunk dials. Let's hear what Josh has to say.
Eric, Jesse. This is the original, Joshua, Josh from Texas. Been a while since I've called in. I keep continuing to hear this get off my back slogan that you guys adopted. And I am impressed, and it gets me, cracking up every time I hear it. I've got other friends that I've recommended to you guys. they bring it up, they pick on me also, but I gotta be honest with you guys, man, that was coming from the heart, man. You know, you guys, my first original call, y'all were begging for people to call in. I don't think anybody had called in yet. I tried to call in, y'all said that I was talking through a raccoon's ass and that I should call from a landline. So I came back and I kind of explained myself, and at the end I said, get off my back, which I say that whenever I feel like somebody's hounding me. But anyways, there you go. I'm hearing it from Germany to, you know, Washington. So it's crazy to hear that, but I love it. But officially, get off my back. Seriously, guys, come on now. You are killing me with this. But keep it up. Keep up the good work. And I guess, I don't know, that's about it. Keep on trucking.
You keep on trucking, Josh.
Keep on trucking there.
Dude, Josh from Texas. So this is it. We thought that it was not Josh from Texas. We thought it was Sean from Texas, but apparently it's Josh from Texas, the originator of the Get Off My Back. And I think we have to put Josh from Texas into the Personal Arrogance Hall of Fame.
Oh, definitely.
Because, come on, not only is Get Off My Back now the greeting that every single listener calls in and finishes their call with, but also it spawned a podcast, Get Off My Running Back, which is my football podcast, which will be available tomorrow. It's a huge deal. Josh from Texas, officially inducted into the Personal Arrogance Hall of Fame.
He also said something else that was great that first time he called in. He said, I literally had to pull over and kick my own ass.
Oh, man. The slogan master himself. He's a regular Don Draper, this guy.
Yeah.
All right. Up next, we got a phone call. It's a little closer to home. Here we go.
Hey, Jesse and Eric. This is Kevin from Seattle calling. And I was just finishing listening to episode 165. And I think that getting in an internet argument is worse than getting punched in the face. And I had a suggestion here for you and then a question for you. First suggestion is, I think that we need to form a special team on Reddit called the Personal Arrogance Brewery Strike Team, a.k.a. PAPST, because we're hipsters and we don't mind getting in your face. And whenever something happens and the Personal Arrogance crew is getting stepped on and trolled by all the know-it-alls and jerks on Reddit, that we can just kind of pull the PAPST together and attack as a team. I wonder what your thoughts are on that. Second thing was a question. So I had some buddies show up out of town to come to PAX this year, and wouldn't you know it, the first thing we did was we went into a vendor area, one of the rooms where they're doing demos of their games and stuff. And this is from a pretty reputable game company. I'm not going to trash them by calling them out here, by their name on the podcast. But the experience that we had, we were beta testing a game, and it was probably the most awkward and horrible experience to have on the first day of a gaming convention. Thankfully, we had other experiences as a group that were a heck of a lot more enjoyable. But I was curious if there was ever a time when you were trying to introduce somebody to the joys of board gaming, and that whole attempt just flew right out the window and fell on its face as you were doing that. If you had any kind of cool stories to share about that. So anyway, hope you guys stay arrogant and stay off my back.
You stay off my back, Kevin.
Stay off my back. Keep on trucking.
So first of all, this PAPS thing, I mean, I love the sentiment. I love the idea. But I feel like the only way to defeat trolls is to never fight them.
Mm.
I learned that from Sun Tzu.
That's not even... Sure, that's true. But if it's like... If it's not someone who's necessarily a troll, it's just mm-hmm. someone who's wrong and thinks they're right. But isn't trying to just troll you, then you might need to call in some backup.
That's true. And I mean, you could have different tactical strikes. So first of all, it could just be an upvote, downvote. So right. Everybody upvotes your post and downvotes his post immediately. Boom. That's a tactical strike. That's a surgical strike. Sometimes you got to go in there with, you know, the shock and awe, though, which is just a lot of comments.
Yeah.
Okay. But who knows? Because you could, you know, get bogged down, get embroiled in the conflict for, you know, it could be months, could be years, and then it just drags on forever. Suddenly, the public is turned against you. So you really have to be tactical in the way that you use this PAPS team.
I love it. I think our the Personal Arrogance Facebook page is a perfect springboard for this. If you're getting bullied online, post it, and then the Personal Arrogance community can rally. Just post a link and ask for help. And
just hope that you're not arguing against another member of the Personal Arrogance community.
No, that could cause a civil war.
Civil war, and then all hell breaks loose. Oh, man. Okay, and then second of all, yeah, the main thing here with board gaming is that if you are... So he's talking that there was an individual room here, and I don't know, I can't speculate as to which individual room here, but I mean, like, Fantasy Flight has their own room there at PAX. But if I'm trying to introduce...
Fantasy Flight immediately sprung to mind.
Yeah, and I think there were a couple other game companies that had ones there. But if I'm trying to introduce people to board gaming, I'm not going to take them to Fantasy Flight. We need to ease into this.
Yeah.
You need to bring into this world. So, like, you know, of course, you know, you get your gateway games of Catan, and Carcassonne is a great gateway game. I think you want to start there, and I don't know. It's a really sad thing because board gaming is such a wonderful thing, and people have really quick knee-jerk reactions to just about everything nowadays. So you want to kind of ease them into it, but that's just kind of a bummer for you, man.
Yeah, one time I was playing a game of Axis and Allies. I was really excited. Mm-hmm. This was up in Bellingham. I got a bunch of people who are interested, and I spent the hour or so before everyone showed up to set up the board and get everything ready, and then people just talked the entire time. I didn't even get through one turn, and I was pretty defeated. I was like, "Oh, this isn't gonna happen, is it?"
That's the worst, man. Especially, and then also, dude, if you're out there and you're learning a new game, don't be a dick. Listen to the rules.
Yes. There's nothing I hate more than having to explain the rules multiple times just because you weren't listening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway, and then also,
it's
if you're explaining rules,
if you need it, you didn't understand it, obviously. Right. But if it's just because you're blabbing,
right,
and then you want it explained on your own terms.
Because guess what? I want to have fun with you at the table as well. Like, let's get through the rules part. I know it's kind of a drag, but,
right,
you know. Anyway, Kevin, I feel
the worst about games is when you get a game that's really complicated, just getting through the rules and being like, I promise, guys, this game is going to be fun.
Yeah.
I promise it's fun.
Yeah.
But I got a 45-minute spiel first so that everyone goes into it prepared. So get out your 3-ring binder and pencil.
Let's do this.
1, 2, 3, eyes on me. I'm talking.
1, 2, eyes on you. all right, and then finally we got a great call here from Boston. I'm very excited about it. Here it is.
Hey, Jesse and Eric. This is Allison calling out of Boston. I've been listening to probably the last 7 or so episodes of your podcast. It was due to the crossover questions that you guys did with my favorite gals at the Because Show, and I really loved it, so I was listening to your episode to hear your answers, and the Because Show ladies are awesome, but I feel like they kind of punted on your getting ladies to drink beer question, because, as you may have noticed, they are ladies that don't drink beer, and so they didn't feel like they had good answers. I am a lady that drinks beer. I love it. And I have a couple suggestions. I don't do marketing. I'm not in the beer industry. I just like beer. So you can take it for what it's worth. The first is, beer kind of has a reputation for being broed out. It's not accessible to women. I think that a lot of women are intimidated by it. So if you did, maybe follow a little bit of the example from... There's a place called the Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project that I really love that's Massachusetts-based, and they have T-shirts that say, stay pretty and drink real beer, and they have really cool sort of, you know, logos and stuff that just make it a little more accessible, and it's a husband and wife team, so there's sort of that feminine touch to it. So more ladies brewing beer and selling beer to the ladies, always a good bonus. The second thing you can do is go to where the ladies are, and offer small samples, so maybe salons, maybe spas, maybe, I don't know, boutiques, shoe stores, just go there, and people are not going to turn down free booze, and, you know, the ladies might taste something that they like. The last thing is that for beer geeks, sell beer to your girlfriends. Again, sort of touching back up on the throw it out saying beer tends to be a thing that a lot of guys do with other guys. Branch out. Mix in a bar with a lady friend. You know, have her try a craft beer, you know, and explain to her the nuances of it and get her a little geeked out about it. Because honestly, that's how I got into it, was having good guy friends that sort of showed me the way into great beers. Love your show so much. Not so much on the video game stuff, but everything else is pretty rad. Get off my backless cocktail dress.
Oh,
that's a good one.
That was a good one.
Get off my backless cocktail.
Get off my backless cocktail. It might. Don't you snag this. Don't you ruin this for me, Jesse.
yeah, I really like her point about go where the women are.
That's a good point. I also, like, I don't really understand the bro thing. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned from watching football, it's that beer commercials are not catered just toward men.
Yeah, there's all those hot chicks in bikinis in the commercials. How is that not inclusive?
I think it's totally true. I mean, I know women, you know, especially here in Seattle, that are very big beer fans. And it's like, you just got to try this stuff. I think, you know, making, like she says, unbroing it and just making it a product that is delicious and diverse and it's something that people can appreciate on a face value, I think is like a huge barrier right now in the beer world. And I think that's something that the craft brewing industry is making headway at, is like,
yeah,
not it is, Bud Lighting it up, you know?
It is and it isn't. Like, there was a brewery, I can't remember who, I want to say it was out of Texas somewhere,
mm-hmm.
that just got accused of, like, supporting rape culture because on its blonde lager or whatever, it's like, she goes down easy.
Oh, God.
And it's like, I mean, the craft brewing community is just as vulnerable to cheap sexist tactics as the macros are.
Well, it's so true, but kind of a problem with that, too, that goes along with that is that you are competing against Budweiser, and you're all in it together. So when something like that happens, it reflects poorly on the entire microbrew industry because it's you against the big guys.
I agree. Yeah. And I think it is. I would like to see the craft brewing industry really step up and show initiative and being inclusive. And yeah, I really think that the just going to where women are and offering free samples, that's a great start.
That is a great start.
And it just will make people think, you know, next time when it comes to purchasing whatever you feel like drinking that night, you know, hey, I remember drinking that IPA. I really enjoyed it, so I'm going to pick that up.
I'm excited to see what Russell Nisha does with her home brews.
She's going to go straight into cooking meth. I think she's going to escalate it.
That's a $15 million a year industry, okay? So why don't you... She can pull in the big bucks there.
Brings 100... In America, $100 billion a year industry.
Oh, I was talking $15 million for the cook.
Oh, okay, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of Breaking Bad.
Oh, lately. Have you?
Yeah, and I fucking love it. Oh God, it's so good. It's so good, and then it's great because I can listen back to the Breaking Good podcasts.
Right.
While I buzz through the whole thing, I'm already like halfway through season four, so.
Mm.
Oh my goodness, it's a great show. All right, well, let's get this show on the road. What do you say? Oh wait, we have a little bit more listener mail, so I just want to touch on this quickly. First of all, the Pico Brew, are we going to talk about this later in the show possibly?
You know, can we get to the rest of the mail later maybe?
Yeah,
we got a lot today.
We do. I just want to buzz through this real quick.
Okay.
And then we got Hot Babe J wrote in. He said, I was wondering if you two enjoy quoting any famous phrases from movies or TV shows. These are oftentimes good for a laugh at parties and hanging out with friends. Here are three of my favorite. Resistance is futile from Star Trek. Your powers are weak, old man. From Darth Vader from episode 4, which I really like. And then well, 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 Hans from Die Hard. I want to hear your favorite lines. Basically anything from Kung Pao Under the Fist.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's a lot of nuts.
Stars Above.
Yeah, Stars Above. I do a lot of Futurama quotes.
Yeah.
I find myself saying, men love it when you really glob it on a lot.
Men love it when you really glob it on. That guy, he sounds like John Lovitz to me. Okay, and then finally, the 10 types of beer craft drinkers. I think that this needs to turn itself into a topic later, but JR, thank you for setting this in. We will
talk
about
it's really
that.
Funny. I got a laugh reading that. I don't quite fit any one of those.
Mm-hmm.
but you might disagree.
I didn't see Podcaster on there. All right, let's move on to a little tiny bit roll-off. We're just going to roll a 20-sided dice, see who gets to talk first on the podcast this week. And here we go.
Uh-oh. What's Uh-oh, WrestleNisha. Oh, there it is. Also, WrestleNisha popped my D20 into her mouth the other day. I was a little bit worried.
Choking hazard.
11.
Roll to 7. J-Dog, you're up.
All right, the streak is over. Mm-hmm. So, a very important holiday is approaching.
Correct.
I know you like it. I like I love it. My daughter loves it.
Because it's her birthday.
Because it's her birthday.
And it's great because I'm now excited about Elsa's birthday every year because now it's a costume party.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
It's a lot of fun. And it's gonna be a costume keg party also.
Are you Spurious, dude?
Britney Spurious.
Lydia and I have her costumes and pretty good.
Is she going to be Robin?
Yeah.
So.
She got all worked out, and it's an awesome costume. Batman
Wait,
and Robin.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That's great.
It's so good because she's like, I'm a foot taller than she is. So it literally looks perfect.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Anyway, so with the Halloween rapidly approaching, mm-hmm. you got to buy candy. You got to mm-hmm. buy a costume.
Right.
And costs can add up.
Totally.
I have to buy birthday presents for my daughter.
Yeah.
So there's an article in the nydailynews.com
mm-hmm.
about best ways to be cheap on Halloween.
Okay.
So I thought maybe we could go through some of these.
Let's do it, dude. But first of all, what are you going to be for Halloween? So I didn't say what I was going to be on this podcast, but I'm going to be Batman. My wife is going to be Robin. It's amazing. Right.
I don't know yet. Maybe by the Ooh. End of this, we'll figure it out.
That happened to me last year. We went to Value Village a couple days before the Halloween and just let the thrift store speak to us. And yeah, walked out of there. We walked out of there as 80 skiers.
That's good.
Like from Better Off Dead. It was perfect.
There's always ski equipment.
Yeah, there's always a ton of ski equipment. And then there were like mullets in the wig section.
Yeah.
It was good.
Skiing's one of those hobbies that I'm never going to get into. It's just a black hole of dollar bills.
It really is. It's as if you're going to be a skier, that's like your thing. Like, that's all you do. Like, that's all you do is ski.
I also don't get why there are so many skis in Value Village. Mm-hmm. There's always a ton of skis. It's like, are skis made in the 80s, like, bad?
Totally bad.
Like, skis seem like pretty simple technology.
Dude, those are like really old skis, man.
Yeah, but I mean, would they still work fine?
I have no idea. But this is my philosophy. Like when I go golfing, like all my golf clubs are from Valley Village. So
yeah,
like
that's true. There's a bunch of golf clubs too.
Yeah, the woods are all made out of actual wood because they're just old thrift store. Like people died and then they gave their golf clubs to Valley Village.
See, are these people dying though, or are they upgrading?
I don't think they're upgrading because they wouldn't have clubs that were that old if they were like you. If you have wooden woods, like you're not currently golfing.
Yeah, but it's also possible. Like you're like, all right, I'm gonna buy this other set of clubs.
Right.
I want new clubs because mine are so old. But I'm gonna hang on to these ones.
Right.
Just put them in the garage, and then 20 years later, you're like, I'm never gonna use these again.
Yeah, let's give them to some guy.
And
I'm
buying another set of clubs. I don't need three.
I do have like a really fun idea for it's called the Valley Village Open. And what I want to do is everybody gets $10 and you have to go to Valley Village and buy all your golf clubs for $10. And then you go to a municipal course and you can only use the clubs that you bought.
No. Okay.
And the kicker is that you can also buy other things. To hit the ball with. But it has to be from Value Village, and you can't spend more than $10 on everything.
That's funny. I thought that you would go to Value Village, grab the clubs, and just start playing in the store.
It's a good way to leave Value Village very quickly.
I don't know, man. I worked at a thrift store, and you had to be pretty, pretty bad to be requested that you leave. I mean, there's literally people stealing there 100% of the time, and the employees know it.
100% of the time shoplifting.
Yeah, yeah, there's 100%, they've reached 100% shoplifting.
I should shoplift more when I go to Value Village.
popping tags is a real thing. That's no lie.
Oh, I didn't understand. I didn't realize that that's what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing is popping tags.
You're popping the tags off of it. And then you're like, yeah, it didn't have a price. So it was 99 cents, right?
Well, that's what the thing that I hate the most about thrift stores is that, like, if it doesn't have a tag on it, then they just put an arbitrary price on it, which means that you should be able to haggle.
Everything's extremely arbitrary.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Are we talking about Halloween?
We're talking about Halloween. All right. I might go as a Value Village golfer.
Yeah, or a Value Village employee.
I think I have my Goodwill name tag somewhere.
There you go.
So number one here is make your own costume.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've definitely never bought a store-bought costume.
I'm trying to think. I don't really do that. And sometimes I go elaborate.
I feel like when you're past 12, you're not allowed to buy a costume.
Well,
anymore.
And plus it's a waste of money, dude. Like, you can get a much cooler costume much cheaper.
Right.
Than buying that polyester crap from that's in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
That's like $65. Yeah. It's like
$65. Expensive.
Yeah, like so. Last 4 years, I was a Ghostbuster, and then I was Steve Jobs, and then I was an 80s skier. And this year, I'm Batman. I made all of these costumes from the ground up. My Batman costume is pretty legit, and it is much cheaper than buying like an authentic Batman costume.
Right. Yeah.
And like my Ghostbusters costume, I just went to the Army Navy surplus store and got a brown jumpsuit.
I remember I was there.
Yeah, and then I was able to go on eBay and get a Ghostbusters custom-made patch that says Walquist on it, and it's like the same patch that they have in the movie, and I got Walquist printed, embroidered on it for $4.95.
That's pretty sweet.
And then just sewed that shit on. And it's a good-looking costume. It cost me like $25.
That's pretty legit.
Anyway.
But it's not sexy enough.
Well, I cut out the crotch. It's crotchless.
Just a big hole.
Yeah, just a giant hole.
So number two is use items you already have at home.
Okay.
And they have, so, I don't know where this quote comes from. Oh, okay, yeah. Anyone can step into the craziest outfit in the house and call themselves Lady Gaga. Real Simple Magazine suggests throwing a bike tire...
Sorry.
Throw a bike tire around your neck, stick a thermometer in your mouth, and call yourself sick and tired.
Bum, 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 bum. Mercury poisoning, guys.
Or staple torn newspaper to old clothes and call it breaking news.
Mm.
So here's one, Eric. you'll be rife. You're a prime candidate for this one.
Okay.
Trade costume with friends.
Oh, I like this.
The old costume swap.
Yeah, you want to be a Walquist Ghostbuster?
Yeah. I think next year I want to be a 7-foot-tall Walquist Ghostbuster.
I think that maybe I should be less personal specific with my costumes. Yeah, dude. I mean, I got a whole Batman thing. I got my Steve Jobs get up. Actually, yeah. I think I might have gotten rid of that.
I don't know if the Steve Jobs one will be quite as good next year.
It's still good, man. You got to get the silver hair paint, though.
Yeah.
That's the crux of the matter. And I bought some that was another one. It was like $12 for the black crew neck turtleneck on Amazon. And then I bought Santa Claus glasses for $4. That's Steve Jobs' costume. And then I just tucked in the thing to some jeans and wore my running shoes, and then I was Steve Jobs. The whole costume was like less than $20.
That's pretty good. So number four is go generic on candy.
Okay.
Ouch.
Yeah, because, I mean, kids are going to hate you, but they're going to hate you for, like, 30 seconds.
Number five, DIY decor. Did you make any Halloween decorations this year?
I did not. We were going to have a party, but then it was going to be at my sister's house, and now she has to work on Halloween, so it didn't work out.
Oh, bummer.
But I really wanted to do the whole spiderweb thing. So they're just saying use real spiderwebs.
Spiders are free and abundant.
Just fill your house with spiders, and then your house will be super creepy.
Find the nearest pile of rotting leaves. Fill your house with creepy spiders.
Oh, God. Oh, God. It's just like some dude in his kitchen, like, breaking open a spider nest and being like, make my decorations. Oh,
so here's a helpful tip.
He's like,
shop in November.
Sorry. Shop in November?
Yeah, okay. Thanks, List. I'll keep that in mind for next year, over a year from now.
I'll tell you what, I started making my Batman costume in June.
I know. You wore your mask at my wedding.
That's true. I got my mask the day of your wedding. We just happened to be driving by the post office and I picked it up and then we drove to your wedding.
Yeah. So seven is don't buy loads of candy.
Okay.
Check.
Mm-hmm.
Avoid specialty stores. I think we've been over that.
Mm-hmm.
Number nine, pick your own pumpkin. While you're there, pick up some spiders.
How thrifty are we being here? Because I'm pretty sure pumpkins are like $3.
It's pretty thrifty.
Yeah.
Well, the final one, number 10, is my favorite and the thriftiest of all. Number 10, skip the holiday altogether.
I love it. Oh, man.
Just don't do Halloween this year. That way you'll save some bucks.
Well, the crazy thing about Halloween this year, so Halloween's on Thursday, right? It's a week from the day that this podcast is being released. And even still, like, I'm going to a Halloween party this weekend. Like, it's two weekends of Halloween.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. When it's midweek,
yeah.
People will definitely celebrate it early and later.
But that's what I don't understand, because, like, it's not really midweek. Thursday is not midweek. Thursday is late week.
Yeah, Thursday's fine. You just got one day left. Go to work on Friday hungover. And...
Well, just go have your Halloween party on Friday. Dia de los Muertos, people. Come on.
That's true. You can just do it on Friday.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to be. My favorite costumes are the kind of the topical ones.
Yep.
Like Somali Pirate was a good one. Chilean Miner.
Steve Jobs,
yep. Exactly, because he died.
Right before that.
So I think I want to be a pirate
mm-hmm.
who is dressed up like a British soccer hooligan.
Oh, that's very topical for this podcast.
Yeah. Follow-up question. Would anyone understand what the hell I was going for with that?
I don't know. I think that you should, be dressed up like a congressman, but wear mittens so you can't really do anything.
Oh, go as a shutdown.
Yeah, go as the government shutdown.
I'll just dress up as the Capitol building.
Perfect.
And anytime anyone talks to me, I'll just collapse to the floor.
Yeah, I love the acting costumes. It has a has a move you have to do with it.
Yeah, I'm not as good as you are. I'm definitely not as good as you are when it comes to Halloween costumes.
I just love Halloween, dude, and I love the costume element. But
yeah, I'm just such a procrastinator.
Yeah, and I've been in your boat. That's why I do this stuff like super early. Because that way I don't even have to worry about it. And also, things get more expensive the closer you get to Halloween.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're ordering the Batman replica Dark Knight belt off of Amazon in July, it's only, like, $8.
Mm-hmm.
So get that shit while it's hot.
Yeah. Maybe I should go as Tasha giving birth.
Oh, no.
Since it's exactly a year ago.
There was the year where Jordy and Jill were us, which was a great costume, and it made me feel extremely flattered.
That was really good.
So maybe you should be Tasha and Tasha should be you.
There you go. She can be me a year ago.
Playing Halo 4. Oh, man. Well... to the listener, if you have any ideas for what Jesse should be for Halloween this year, please give us an email, personalarrogance@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 360-362-0024. Jesse, I'm going to move on to my first topic, and it has to do with movies.
Do you know what nemesis means?
It's movie time, buddy, and we teased this last week, but you saw a little movie called Gravity this weekend.
I did, in three dimensions.
Three-dimensional? Where did you see it at?
Paulsbo.
Oh, you went all the way down to Paulsbo. I was wondering if it was playing at the Rose.
It was playing at the Rose, but my lovely sister bought me a like two tickets mm-hmm. and $10 worth of popcorn kind of coupon.
Nicely
thing.
Done.
So we drove to Bremerton, dropped off WrestleNesha, then drove to Paulsbo, then watched the movie, and then drove back to Bremerton, and then drove back to Port Townsend.
Well, that's a direct route.
Yeah. It was only 3 hours of driving for a 90-minute movie.
Oh, Kitsap County traffic humor. Really relevant to our listeners. And
especially the ones in Dublin.
Totally. I love that theater, though. I've seen tons of movies at that theater. That was like my high school. Anyway, Jesse, initial thoughts on Gravity?
I guess I wish it hadn't been hyped up so much.
Mm.
I thought it was good. It's like better than a lot of movies that right. I've seen. Definitely better than the average movie.
Right.
But I didn't think it was great.
Okay. I love the analogy that that one of my friends posted on Facebook. He's like, I saw Gravity this weekend, but I really think they should have gone with their original title. Oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what this is. It's just yeah. like, yeah. But I mean, talk about a suspenseful movie. There's something that's happening in Hollywood, and it's happened over the last 2 years in a really big way. And it's these really critically acclaimed, really reality-based movies. And I mean, this movie is based in reality, even though it takes place in outer space, and there's a lot of things that are semi-unrealistic about it. But
okay,
then
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Jeez.
But, well, I mean, first of all, everybody's seen the movie now, so if
yeah,
if you
we're gonna spoil the shit out of it.
Yeah. But this movie and Argo are two movies that are extremely suspenseful, and that's what this movie reminded me of the most was Argo. And I don't know if you've seen Argo.
I did see Argo.
That is a movie that is like super intense as well, and it's like edge of the seat.
I don't know. I didn't get. I didn't. I feel like in the last year, I could definitely think of why this happened. But my entertainment tension receptor is just turned off.
Ah.
Like I did. I wasn't tense about this movie.
You weren't tense about Gravity?
No.
And you weren't tense about Argo either?
No. They were both just like stuff happening.
You might be a robot. You might be a robot. I literally think that Argo
is
like...
That's what I was talking about when I decided to get the cybernetic implants in my brain.
Yeah. You know, if you upload your entire consciousness to the internet, there are some side effects. Argo was like a movie that I thought was like the most suspenseful movie I've ever seen in my life.
Well, here's the thing about Argo. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. They get out. Yeah, and everybody knows that they get out.
Right.
Like, and I, for some reason, I have such a hard time with that shit. Because, like, it's the same thing with Breaking Bad. Like, I know now the series is over. I know that Walter White at least lives until the last episode of the series. Mm-hmm. You'd think that this would alleviate the stress that it causes me when his life is in peril in this television show, but it doesn't. I'm still, like, really worried for him the entire time. And I know that him and Jesse, like, make it to the end of the series. So, like, I don't know.
Well, one of them does.
You know. I mean, they're at least alive till the last episode. I don't know what happens then. But obviously they built this show around them. So anyway, it's hard for me to separate that in my mind though from like the from you know, I know that this is all going to work out, but I'm still really caught up in the suspense of this. But Gravity is a movie where you don't know if it's going to work out.
Right, you don't.
In fact, there's a part of the movie where
like
there's a part of the movie where she gives up.
Yes,
right?
She does.
And then she has the hallucination of George Clooney.
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't spoil that for me.
Which, if I had a nickel for every time I've hallucinated about George Clooney. Yikes. But, you know, basically the movie is just like everything goes wrong. And it tells you that right at the beginning of the movie. It's, you know, basically in space, life is impossible. They put this quote up at the beginning and they're like, everything is going to go to shit in this movie. You can't hold on to anything. Like, I love the use of weightlessness in this movie.
Yeah, all the, this was one of those movies where I honestly couldn't tell, like, what was CGI and what wasn't.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was, like, 100% CGI.
It looked really good.
Yeah.
And the way items were, like, floating around and ricocheting, like, that one point where she loses her drill because it just kind of floats off, and you're like, no.
And that's this whole movie is just like, because...
Yeah, it was a great, like... It was like a simulator. It was like a space simulator of what just doing stuff and, like, trying to survive in space would actually be like.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this thing captures better than, I think, any other movie, is how weightlessness actually works in space.
Right.
So,
yeah, it was really good, especially, like, the explosion.
Yeah.
Like, those little puffs of fire, like, coming off. It's like, wow, that's crazy. I never even thought about how, like, fire would work in a weightless environment.
Yeah, exactly. How it kind of floats around, and then
it's like an orb, like a floating orb, kind of.
And when her leg gets caught up in the parachute on the space capsule, and he has to let her go.
That I didn't understand why that happened.
Because,
like, why was he still moving the opposite direction?
Well, so the craft was pulling it one way. The craft is going in one direction. He was connected to her, pulling her in the opposite direction. So
right.
He was pulling her away from the craft.
So and here's what
the amazing
happens,
thing, like, about this is that they're all moving at, like, thousands of miles an hour. Like, it's basically you're sitting in a car. Like, you know, we can sit in a car and go 60 miles an hour and still be able to look in the back and ruffle through a bag. They're going, like, thousands of miles an hour around the Earth.
Well,
while all of this is happening.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going thousands of miles an hour.
They're absolutely going thousands of miles around the Earth. Because they're going through orbits. They're, like, orbiting around the Earth. You're going super, super fast. I'll look it up. Just to
okay.
Be sure.
But here's the thing. So, like, if you haven't seen it, like, she gets... like, lost at space, and he has this little chair with gas thrusters on it, and he, like, latches onto her and is pulling her towards the space station that's kind of going to be their refuge. And they overshoot it, and his chair runs out of gas.
Right.
And, but then she, like, gets all tangled up in these ropes.
Yep.
And there's the tether between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they've stopped.
Well, like, that's the thing, is that they haven't stopped. So I just looked it up. The International Space Station is going, its average speed is 7.66 kilometers per second. It's going 17,100 miles per hour around the Earth.
Huh.
So that's the speed these guys are traveling to. And it just, I mean...
Okay, I guess that makes sense. He just had so much, like, stored energy that...
Right.
But, that, like, why was she able to stop? She stops when they get tangled up. Yeah. She stops, but he doesn't.
Well, it's the same reason that so she gets tangled up first, then he grabs onto her, latches onto her because she throws him the line. So then he grabs the line. So she becomes the that fulcrum between them. So she has already been stopped by the space station, but he is being stopped by her, and now the space station is giving way to her. Because of the friction of the ropes. So he's pulling her away.
I don't know. I don't... There's a period of time where they are both stopped.
But
and
there's,
then
but there's
when
still
they
moving.
De-latch, they move different directions.
Yeah, because he's still moving in a different direction.
But they're connected. They're connected
but that's
and
the,
stopped.
I think that that's what this movie is trying to establish, is like everything is out the window when you're in space. Like things that seem like they should work just don't fucking work.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I thought that was really interesting. Now, part of this movie, along with being oh shit, is that I felt like this movie was just a huge metaphor for being born.
Yeah,
and obviously was. And obviously it's rebirth, but...
It's rebirth after tragedy. There's a scene where she's obviously a fetus floating around.
Yeah, like she's rotating around and she's got a cable that is right in the place of an umbilical cord. Like that's when she finally gets inside of the space station that she's trying to get to. The first space station that she's trying to get to. but it's not only that. Like So first of all, there's like a bunch of them floating around, and then she's the only one who enters the capsule. So like that's like, what's that?
Oh yeah, they're like a bunch of spermies.
Yeah, they're like a bunch of astronauts. There's an explosion.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see where you're going with this.
There's an explosion, right? Uh-huh. And then that is what that's what sends all this chaos around. Now suddenly they're all flying through space and all of them die except for her once she enters the capsule, which is basically
an explosion
the
from
egg.
A rocket, which is about as phallic of an object as you can.
Exactly, right? You know, a rocket penetrates a satellite. Anyway.
Satellite are such vaginas.
Yeah, satellite is totally a metaphor for vagina. Anyway, all the sperm die, and they're all in their little white suits. And then she gets into the space capsule, and that's the most blatant, like, in the fetal position with the umbilical cord. I don't really know about all the fire and stuff. And then all that. But finally, once she gets to the Chinese space capsule, and it's entering the Earth's atmosphere, and then she starts going down into the ship. It's like an extremely traumatic experience, right? She's basically leaving one world and going to another. Once she crash lands into the ocean, she takes off her spacesuit, but then opens the door, and then it starts sinking down, and she starts drowning, right? And she she can't breathe, which is like basically the metaphor that I got from that was that it's like a baby. Like, all of a sudden, you've been living in this liquid environment, this right. weightless liquid environment for, like, a long time, and now all of a sudden water is your enemy, and you can't breathe in it, and so you have to go up into the air.
Right. You're taking your first gasping breath.
Right. And then she emerges. She, like I said, takes her first gasping breath and then heads to the Earth. It's like, obviously the rebirth metaphor is there, but I thought it was, like, once I saw the umbilical cord scene, I was like, oh, this whole thing is, like, just birth.
Yeah.
If you're contacting other people, there's like the scene where she's talking to like the Mongolian guy on the AM radio feed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a language you can't comprehend, but you hear like this, you know, outside speech. You hear these outside sounds that are outside of your environment, but you can't communicate with them. Stuff like that.
Right.
I feel like it really went heavy on that rebirth metaphor.
It went really heavy on it.
And again,
it's the rebirth, like refinding yourself after tragedy,
mm-hmm.
Moving on and everything.
Right.
But I'm wondering if it isn't also a tiny bit of a metaphor of panspermia.
What's that?
Like the idea that life on Earth originated somewhere else. Somewhere else in space and like came from another planet and propagated on Earth. I kind of felt like that.
I could totally see where you're coming from there, but I would say that this would discount that because it shows how impossible life is outside
right.
of the atmosphere.
Life's impossible in space, but it's possible on different areas outside of space.
That's true.
Traveling
I could
between
see that.
Them.
I could see that. And yeah, literally traveling from station to station to station because there are three different stations that she goes to.
Yeah.
In this. God, and yeah, dude, and just that fucking scary-ass goddamn broken-up satellite that she has to encounter.
I didn't get
every...
enough of that. I didn't get enough satellite to really satiate my bloodlust. And they killed the Indian guy off in such an unsatisfactory way.
Uh-huh.
I want to see, like, pieces of satellite, like, tearing through the spacesuit and, entrails... drifting off into the distance and stuff. It was like PG-13 death by space debris.
Well, as soon as you crack the suit, you just freeze automatically.
Not if before you freeze, a computer chip lodges itself in your windpipe.
And then it immediately freezes.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad. I'm saying they didn't portray the
little,
death.
Not
in
enough action,
enough.
Guys. Not enough fucking action. Well...
Exactly. Not enough action. Not a ton of plot, really.
I guess I could see that, but it's
the
definitely
plot was
suspense.
Just live, try and live.
Yeah, exactly.
See, this is like I feel like this was they were just showing off what they could do. I felt like It was a little hollow, like, from a storytelling point, honestly.
I just thought, sometimes you just want to get on that suspense ride and just ride it. And that's what I, that's how I felt this movie was.
Yeah, for me. It was cool. No, I mean, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. So, the whole time I was watching that movie, I was just thinking about FTL. Because it is so much like FTL. And I was thinking, if they do a movie just like Gravity, except about the game FTL, it would be the perfect space rip-roaring action-adventure movie. Because FTL is like... And then, again, oh, like, man. I get suspense playing FTL, because that's a game where it's like, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit, you're managing a bunch of different things. That's a lot like Gravity. It's like, you have a percentage of oxygen. Like, when she was counting down her oxygen, I was like, totally like FTL. When she was in that space station, it starts exploding, and she, like, closes the hatch. I'm like, just like FTL. So I think if you could combine the game, FTL, with that and make a movie about it, it would be just the best space movie, action-adventure, shoot 'em up, bang-bang with explosions and cool stuff ever.
All right. Well, how many middle fingers are you giving this movie?
I give it one and a quarter.
I'm giving this thing two middle fingers way up. Okay. Also, watch it in 3D. I think this is a movie that really speaks well to watching it on the big screen in 3D.
Yeah, totally. No. I think I would not have enjoyed it nearly as much if I didn't see it in 3D.
And that's the other thing. So Alfonso Cuarón, I don't know if that's exactly how you say his name, but he's a guy who directed this. He also directed Children of Men. And the thing about his movies is, like, they always have the happy ending. Like, he's able to...
Did you watch Children of Men?
Well, but they accomplished their goal. Like, I know that Clive Owen dies at the end of that movie, which, spoiler alert, but that movie's fucking old, so give me a break. He dies at the end of that movie, but she makes it to the boat.
Yeah, like,
the goal is achieved.
Yeah, that's the other thing about Gravity, is when, like, she was in that little pod, has no control over where it's landing, just conveniently lands in water and soft mud right next to the shore that you could swim to. I was like, that's the luckiest break.
Well, I also thought that, like, I want to see Gravity 2 where she has to survive on the island. Because, like, you're not out of the woods yet. You're literally wearing your underwear. You're covered in water, and you're about to go live in the jungle for however long until they can, you know, locate you and find you, which is going to be at least, you know, 6 to 8 hours at the very least.
When she's going in, you know, and you hear on the radio, it's like, Houston, we are dispatching an emergency rescue mission. Mm-hmm. It would have been great if she'd, like, swum up and was treading water, right? And then, like, pans down and, like, a hammerhead shark, like, bumps into her leg. And she's like, oh, no. And then, like, the camera goes back up above water and there's, like, Somali pirates.
Ah, fuck. I should have stayed in space.
Roll credits. Yeah, she has a one-liner.
Yeah.
I should have stayed in space.
All right. Well, let's move on.
I really enjoyed it, though. Yeah. I mean, this guy might be my favorite director.
He does some good stuff, man. I mean, he's right up there. And both
Children of Men is my favorite movie.
Excellent. Yeah, and both him and Guillermo del Toro from Mexico. Like, really, really accomplished great filmmakers from Mexico who are doing original stuff on screen. I think it's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
All right. Let's roll D6 here. We're going to do some trivia. Genius One Trivial Pursuit. And I rolled a 6, which is Sports and Leisure.
All right,
here we go. Jesse, this question is for you. Please play along at home. Who canoed... Oh, sorry. I do not know what this word is. K-A-Y-O-E-D. Okay. Who coyoed Joe Louis in 1936 and was coyoed by him in 1937?
K-O'd?
Oh, is that what that is?
I guess I've never.
Oh God, yeah, that is
just
totally
like
what it is.
K O apostrophe D.
Exactly, K-O'd, K-A-Y-O-E-D.
It's like how M C is like E M M C E E.
Now I feel stupid and outraged.
Okay, what was the question?
Who KO'd Joe Louis in 1936 and was KO'd by him in 1937?
36 and 37. Joe Louis and Joe Jackson.
I'm going to say Jack Johnson. Max Schmeling.
Mm. See, these are all names that I know, but if you ask me...
You know Max Schmeling?
I have heard of him, yeah.
I think he performed my friend's bris. All right.
I think he operated on your deviated septum.
This question is for me. What jockey was nicknamed Banana Nose?
Speaking of deviated septums.
Oh, God. I'm going to say Mighty Joe Young.
I'm going to say John Jackson.
Eddie Arcaro. These are really epic names for the world of sports. All right, Jesse, this question
is
for you.
Our 190-year-old listener is screaming at us.
Yeah, the nursing home, weekly nursing home listening party is super pissed at us right now. Jesse, this question is for you. What's the game of Conkers played with? Conkers, Conkers.
Oh, man, that is super wicked familiar. I want to say, croquet balls.
All right, I'm just going to go cards. Chestnuts.
I was closer geographically.
Geometrically. All right, this question's for me. Who played 2,130 consecutive baseball games for the New York Yankees? I'm going to go with Willie Mays.
I'll say DiMaggio.
Lou Gehrig. Really?
Oh.
And he had to retire because he had Lou Gehrig's disease.
No kidding.
That's the truth.
Well, that's another thrilling installment.
Today I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the planet, and that means we get to move to a geography tiebreaker. Whoever is geographically closest to the answer wins. Jesse, you get to answer first. What is the world's largest sea?
The world's largest sea? And we're talking, a body of water, not the C word?
Yes, SEA.
Okay.
I was going to say Canada.
Is it, God, now I feel really stupid, but is it the Mediterranean Sea?
I would think that would be it, but I'm going to go South China Sea. The Mediterranean. Okay. For a second there.
That was one of those ones that seemed too easy.
For a second there, I was looking at Sports and Leisure still, and the answer was Bill Russell.
The Bill Russell Sea.
The Bill Russell Sea. All right. Well, Jesse, you win everything this week, which means it's your time to talk again.
All right. Speaking of space, let's talk about science.
Yeah, yeah.
If today we're able to create a two-headed dog with six legs, is it possible that a similar creature existed thousands of years ago? And I say yes.
Great Scott.
Great Scott.
Great introduction. So anyway, just a quick aside. I was watching Ancient Aliens.
Uh-huh.
I can't believe that show. And it sucks. I used to love the History Channel so much. Even when it went through its Hitler phase,
mm-hmm.
where it was nothing but Nazi documentaries. Yeah, at but least I mean, it's real history.
Right, it's real history, and it's still World War II, which was their bread and butter.
Yeah. So I was watching this thing, and it was about Buddha. It's so Buddha went to this river, this raging river, and then magically appeared on the other side of it. And then it cuts to that guy with the weird hair. He's like, so this was documented, and there are witnesses and that he was able to appear on the other side of the river.
Right.
And so are we supposed to believe that this was a miracle? Of course not! obviously it was space alien technology.
Yeah.
God, I was so pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, religious texts are never about miracles, dude.
The whole idea that it definitely happened, but it's not God, it's space aliens. It's just you can't, it's the same
selling
thing.
They're selling ad space, man.
This is the
they're
same thing.
Ad space.
I know, it's so bad. And then the other one was like, what if there was a more scientific answer? And then just went into science fiction mumbo jumbo about laser beams and stuff. I'm like, that's not scientific. There's no science behind what you're saying.
Scientific Mumbo Jumbo podcast coming up from the Bald Move Network.
I watched about 5 minutes and like flipped out. Then the only reason I was watching it was because I had to take my eyes off of that garbage Minnesota New York Giants game. Anyway, getting back to science. The Atlantic Ocean is being invaded, Eric.
Okay.
But it's not by space aliens.
It's by Buddhas.
It's not by Buddhas.
Okay.
It's by lionfish.
Oh, fucking lion. Those things are scary, dude.
They're scary, but they're really gorgeous fish.
Beautiful fish. Beautiful but deadly.
They're like, if you go to like tropical fish stores, they're always like a couple $100.
Oh, yeah, because they're fucking poisonous as shit.
Are they the...
They are fucking crazy poisonous.
So, because there's one that's the rockfish that looks exactly like it.
Dude, the lionfish are poisonous as hell, dude.
They're poisonous, they're beautiful.
They're poisonous.
And they're invading the Atlantic.
No. That's crazy.
Yeah, apparently there's like a huge invasion, and Graham Maddox, president and founder of the Ocean Support Foundation, said, quote, "The lionfish invasion is probably the worst environmental disaster the Atlantic will ever face."
BP oil spill, anyone?
No. Well, here's the thing. They have no known predators except for humans. Well, the lionfish are apex predators, apparently.
I think we know what we need to do here, guys.
Yeah.
If we are the only predator, it is our responsibility to put this population in check.
Well, that's what people are saying. And apparently, a lionfish can wipe out 90% of a reef.
What? They're like the humans of the ocean.
They are the humans of the ocean.
Fuck. Okay.
And so, lionfish were first recorded decades ago, and they're okay. So, in the Atlantic, I guess... They've showed up a couple decades ago, but they produce 30,000 to 40,000 eggs every few days and are sexually mature at 1 year old.
Jesus Christ, they are the humans of the ocean.
A female lionfish can produce 1 million offspring a year.
Guys, I think that the main thing here is challenge accepted, all right? We've spent the last 10,000 years taking over this globe as the number one parasite on it. But, you know, our weakness is that we are doing the land thing. I feel like the lionfish are just coming in, they're throwing down the gauntlet and say, "You can have the land, humans, we're going to take the sea."
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see who comes out on top. I generally like to think that with our scuba technology, we have the upper hand, but who knows?
Who knows what kind of technology they're working on?
Exactly.
So, apparently Florida pet owners are blamed.
Floridians, damn it.
So Floridians. This is coming from CNN.com. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, DNA evidence traces all lionfish in the Atlantic back to only 6 to 8 female lionfish.
Mm.
So there's like the lionfish Eve.
So are lionfish native to the Pacific?
They must be from the Pacific, because I guess in the Atlantic they don't have any predators.
Ah, dude. Well, that's fine. We just need to make the apex... We need to make the predator of the Pacific a very stylish aquarium trinket. And then they'll eventually get dumped by bored Floridians into the ocean, and then everything's...
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
Make the lion... Whatever keeps a lionfish in check in the Pacific...
Yeah.
We need to turn into a fad.
Exactly.
Which will quickly... burn out and end up in the Atlantic.
Exactly. God, this is just crazy to me. Do you know that the real name of the lionfish is the Pterios?
Mm, great Roman legionnaire also.
Yeah. God, this is crazy. I'm looking at this right now.
Okay. Across Bermuda, residents are also doing their part to try and take control of the lionfish population. There are lionfish tournaments and fish fries, and you can see "Eat 'em to beat 'em" T-shirts throughout the island.
Oh my god!
And then this Matic guy says, "I don't know if we could stop the lionfish invasion. This isn't a battle we can win. We can only maintain. Human beings started this." Problem. It's our fault they're here. We have to take responsibility and try to fix it or hope we can control it.
All right, so I got the predators here. We got moray eels.
Okay, we definitely need more of those.
Blue-spotted cornet fish. Large groupers, like the tiger grouper. And the Nassau grouper, which I believe has got to be Atlantic and got to be named after Nassau, Bahamas.
Yeah, that makes sense, but maybe there just aren't enough.
We just need some fucking eels, man.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get some moray eels. You know, it worked for Ursula and the Little Mermaid. Just get some eels and keep people in check.
Yeah. I think it's crazy to think that you can just release pets and they're going to take over in a total environment.
It's
like the cane toad in Australia.
It's like every animal in Australia.
Like, except the indigenous
ones. You know that Australia is the only place in the world where you can find wild camels?
Yeah, I did know that.
Because some dude was like, there's a lot of desert here, let's use some camels, and then they all got loose, and then now you're like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah, now there's rampaging mobs of camels
exactly.
That go from town to town terrorizing.
Oh, so,
moving forward to another story out of NY Times.
Yeah.
And this is my second and final story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a private company taking people to space.
Let's do it.
That's not new. There have been, like, SpaceX and stuff.
Right.
Virgin Galactic taking millionaires into space.
Right. But, I don't think Virgin Galactic's done a flight yet. But if there's one thing that gravity's taught me is that I want to go to space.
Yeah, I just... What could go wrong?
Yeah. So what's different about this company?
So what's different about this one, instead of going up in, like, a rocket and getting a couple minutes of space... This one takes you into the upper stratosphere.
Right.
You're not actually going into technical space, but the sky above you turns black.
Let's
do it.
And
you see the curvature of Earth.
Love it.
And they drop you down by deploying a balloon, and you glide down.
Not excited.
So, no, but you get several hours of this instead of just a couple of
How many hours of weightlessness are we talking about?
I don't think there's any weightlessness.
Ah, fuck that noise. I'm not going to space unless I can float around.
I just want to look at the curvature of space.
Ah, come on. How much is this thing? Like $12 million? Like, I'm not going to...
It's only $75,000 drinks included, Eric.
Drinks included?
Yeah.
All right, if you could drink.
Those drinks are the aforementioned $20,000 bottles of Hair of the Dog, barley wine.
I thought that they were, space screwdrivers, which is vodka and Tang.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the rocket rides cost between $100,000 and $250,000. So this one, you get 25% discount, and you get more time up above as you gently float back down, balloon back down to Earth.
I just feel like it's really not worth it unless you're weightlessness. Like, that's all I want.
I don't get your whole weightless. I don't want weightlessness.
You don't
want
to fly around? You don't want to float around? You don't want to swim in air?
And you can get weightlessness on the Vomit Comet.
Yeah, but that's not
the same
thing.
Where they take you up in like a Boeing and then do a nosedive and you float around.
Yeah, I don't want to do that ever.
What? I would rather do that.
I do not want to be in a plane that's nosediving. That's not my idea of any type of fun.
I want to be able to drink a nice craft beer and take a balloon trip down from the upper stratosphere. That's what I want.
If you really want this, Jesse, you could always just take a red eye if you want to, like, look out and see dark sky when you're flying through the air.
No, but you don't get to see the curvature of Earth, ding-dong.
Bring a globe.
Or I could just turn off the lights and hang out in my room, staring at a globe.
Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. Yeah. I think it's exciting.
Well, I guess so. I feel like it's weightlessness or nothing.
Here's the thing, though. The space tourism stuff, I think we're talking, 2010, 2014 prices. I think by, like, 2034, the price tag could really come down to something that you could actually foreseeably do.
Yeah, I'm just waiting until Disneyland Moon Adventure.
We're whalers on the moon.
You take off from Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
And then go to the moon and then come back to Disneyland and then go on the Buzz Lightyear.
Go back to Disney World.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right. Well, let's
there you have it. We got lionfish.
No, we got science, man.
I mean, we'll be able to survive the lionfish infestation if we can colonize space. That much is a fact.
Yeah, you know, I say give them the planet. We got space.
Yeah.
Right?
It's yours.
Plenty of space. All right, I'm going to move on here to a little topic about beer. All right, we're going to go through the aforementioned 10 types of beer drinkers, which was sent to us from JR from Philly. Can't congratulate you enough on joining the marriage troop.
Yeah, I got a beer in the mail today, actually.
Say what?
I got his wedding beer.
Oh, that's what's coming in the mail.
I got a
package from UPS from Pennsylvania. I'm trying to figure out what it is.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I haven't tried it, obviously. It came with like 10,000 coasters, too. So thank you, JR. Oh,
dude. I'm so excited.
I have more youngling coasters than I know what to do with.
And could any of us be as lucky? Right? All right, let's move on. JR from Philly, I love you, buddy. Send me a cheesesteak next time. all right, so these are the 10 types of beer. First of all, you have the local. So you only drink beer that's brewed in your home state or bordering few states exclusively. Champion of the local craft scene. And this really sounds like me.
Oh, I don't know.
Really?
You'll drink beer from other states.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm mostly Washington, Oregon.
That's true. You are
maybe California.
But I mean, if you saw, like, if you went to a beer and they're like, we just got this keg from Indianapolis, you'd be like, sign me up.
Maybe. I have a distinct prejudice against beers from the West Coast.
Yeah, and well, there's good reason for that.
Like, if I see a beer that's from New York, I'm like, eh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good, I guess you don't really do the Belgian stuff either, do you?
I don't. Like, Colorado's kind of the easternmost I get without feeling a little uneasy about it.
And there are 420 brothers, so it's basically the same state.
I am a consummate homer, and I think that that's been expounded upon a lot. And while I love Seattle beers, I mean, Oregon is the beer capital of the world, in my opinion. Specifically, Bend, Oregon. So,
Bend, Oregon, baby.
Yeah.
All right, you haven't been there yet, have you?
No, my mom lived there for years when she was younger. So
interesting. Bend is like a boom bust town.
Oh, yeah?
Like, if you go back like 20 years, it was like one-tenth the population is today.
Hmm.
It's crazy. I bet that must have been the years your mom was living there. Yeah. It's probably a totally different town, but you should think about going next summer.
Dude, there's no reason not to. How long is the drive? Like 6 hours?
Oof, it's a long drive. I would recommend staying in Portland.
Yeah. Oh, well, then totally no deal.
<All right. laughs> Or you can go through Central Washington. Stay in Hood River.
Yeah, stay in Yakima, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Palm Springs of Washington. Okay. Up next, we got the Old Faithful. This guy has worked the same job for 10-plus years, orders the same meal every time he goes to the restaurant. Absolutely no one surprised, always drinks the same beer every weekend from the comfort of a well-worn chair. I am not that guy, and I don't think you are either. Number three, the critic. This guy is a rolling mess of negativity who, despite having downed some of the best beer in existence, cannot seem to say anything good about any beers. I don't think this is either you or I, but I definitely know people like this.
I got a splash of it, but
yeah,
it's my job.
Well, I know, but every brewer's got a splash of beer snob, and you do get a little snobbery sometimes, but not at this level. I have met the people who are like, meh, any beer that you try, meh. You know, that's all you need. The appraiser, this guy is the antithesis of the critic, who, despite tasting some stuff that a man stumbling through the desert dying of thirst would reject and wave off, loves pretty much everything that passes his lips. I feel like that used to be me. Number five, the clueless one. This guy really wants to be a part of the craft beer wave, really wants to fit in with all of his friends at the bar on Friday night as they take turns sipping from a sampler. But the combination of an unsophisticated palate and a possible learning disability keeps him from grasping the finer nuances of good beer.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I feel like that one's really mean-spirited.
I've never met anyone like that. I've never really... If someone's into craft beer, I feel like it's pretty easy to talk about why you like it.
Well, and also it's like... Yeah, exactly. Like, everybody likes beer for certain reasons. It's also like... Like, it's the same thing with board gaming. Like, I feel like this is why beer and board games go together so well. It's like, if you're at all interested in the topic, welcome aboard. Right?
Yeah, it's an open boat.
Yeah, come on in and let's try some beers or let's try some board games. Or, like, this is an open community. Anyone is invited.
Right.
All right, you got the flavor finder. This guy could also be named the bullshitter. This one sounds like you. His ability to identify flavors, many of which are not intentionally added to the brew. Borders on paranormal. Yeah, basically I'm like, if it's an amber and it tastes like bananas, that's one thing. I do like an IPA that tastes like a crisp apple, a crisp
amber
Granny Smith.
Tastes like banana. You're crazy.
Dude, certain ambers taste like banana like crazy.
Well, a Hefeweizen tastes like banana.
Beer snob is next. That one sounds like someone I know.
Oh.
Everyone knows of these guys. The person just not happy to crack and pour and drink his beer. A guy who cannot control the urge to explain why beers he drinks are vastly superior to the beers you drink. He would never be caught dead with something less than 9.5 ABV, somehow equating alcohol content to quality. I feel like that's where it veers for you, for sure, because you're a big Session Saison.
I'm not a beer snob.
No.
I don't think that there's any inherent superiority in different beers.
All right, well, up next is number 8, the beer snob.
That's
snob.
Just let me get to this real quick.
Okay.
The whole ABV thing, I feel like there's an analogy to be made between the ABV creep and the Magic the Gathering power creep.
Totally.
Where everyone just wants to slightly outpace what came before it, so you get ABVs creeping up and up, and now you can't get an IPA unless it's 7%. It's like, man, I don't just bring it back down to 5, please.
Well, that's like, the Slayer is 7.4% alcohol.
That's a big beer.
The Wassail that I'm drinking right now from Full Sail is 7.2% alcohol.
Yeah, 7% is a pretty big.
That's
beer.
The barrier. Once you cross, I mean. A lot for me. Once you cross 6%, then you're starting to creep up pretty high.
You're talking about beers that you can get drunk off.
Yeah, like 5.8%. Like I talked about this last week. The Weed Whacker from Terminal Gravity, 4.8%. It's the perfect beer to drink.
Right.
Like I love a session ale.
Yeah, me too. But we also like to drink a lot.
That's true. Up next to Beer Snob Snob, this guy has gotten all the meta. This guy's gotten all meta and is snobby about how snobby the beer snobs snob.
That's me.
That is you. He is the counterculture backlash against the condescension that permeates the beer world, falling back on non-craft beers with lots of folklore like Pabst Blue Ribbon, the National Bohemian. I don't know if that's totally, but you'll drink any beer. I think you
I'll
are the beer snob
beer.
Snob.
Yeah.
I think you're the beer snob.
I'm a bit of a beer snob snob, but...
But I would say that the beer snob...
I don't not drink craft beer because I think that only snobs drink craft beer. I drink a bunch of craft beer. I drink everything. Yeah.
Well, I think that they're trying to say the beer snob snob is the hipster, but...
Right.
I feel like, Jesse, in a lot of ways, you fall into hipster categories without actually being a hipster.
Yeah. I've dodged a lot now that I'm a father, because a lot of hipster traits are actually just dad traits.
That's perfect. Yeah,
it's hard to be a hipster and a dad. You just kind of end up being a dad.
That's true. I don't. You could be a hipster dad though if you have like the big 1800s bicycle with the bike seat on the back for your baby.
So I should get rid of that then.
Once again,
saying?
Portland. Okay, the comparer is next. This guy can't help but compare the beer he's drinking to every other beer he's ever drunk. The first words out of his mouth after a virgin sip of a new brew are always, this reminds me of.
Yeah.
I might have a little bit of that, but I don't really think so. And then number 10 is the Brewby. The new guy, the excited guy, the guy who just tried his first Stone Ruination IPA and just can't stop talking about it. A new craft beer fan is born in the maternity wards of brew pubs every Friday night. This is the thing, like we talked about, though. It's like you can't hate on these guys because you need people in the boat. Like,
yeah,
if we
exactly.
want more craft beer, we need more craft beer fans. That's just the bottom line. So I like that. But I think that you are the beer snob snob, and I think that I am the local.
Yeah, I think so. That's good. My dad's turning into a brewbie.
That's good.
Yeah, he's shunned his lifelong favorite of Molson Ice.
Uh-huh.
Now wow. When I come over, there's Hopzar in the refrigerator.
You gotta love Bridgeport, dude. I really like Bridgeport.
Hopzar, where once there was Molson Ice. It's great.
And, you know, Hopzar, a local brewery to the Pacific Northwest.
You're such a snob about it. I'm just going to drink. You know, Belgian beers were craft breweries way before the 80s and the craft beer boom got popular over here. I don't know why I'm doing, like, some sort of hybrid, who's that comedian with the Jell-O pudding pops?
That would be Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you want to check out this list, it's at literatureandlibation.com. Oh, I can't do it. /2013/5/23/ the 10 types of craft beer drinkers, hyphens in between all those words, /.
Wow. Great.
So get that there. My Bill Cosby impression really fell apart. Well, I think it's time to talk about the Bald Move Network. The Bald Move Network, go to baldmove.com. Right now, Walking Dead is in full swing, guys. And so the Watching Dead podcast is, of course, there. You kickstarted it, and you hit those stretch goals, which means that Aaron is putting out his survival guide every week for each episode, telling you who would actually survive that zombie apocalypse episode, not to mention the instant casts that are available. It's just, if you're a Walking Dead fan, you got to be on baldmove.com. And if you know a Walking Dead fan, why haven't you told them about baldmove.com? What's the deal, man? So anyway, baldmove.com. Also, if you're watching Breaking Bad like me, please listen to the Breaking Good podcast in retrospect. It will make you laugh. It will make you cry because you wish that there was more show to be had. Of course, there's also the Because Show, which we did our exchange with, and we are we love those ladies down in Southern California. We have Up Yours Downstairs, which is everything Edwardian. So if you are into, what's that show? Downton Abbey. Or anything like it. Listen to Up Yours Downstairs. Downton Abbey will be returning soon on PBS. And you can hack that shit on the intranet, I'm pretty sure, as well. So, and then finally, we got Get Off My Running Back, which is my football podcast. And if you're not listening to that and you're a football fan, what the hell, man? We got a new guest host on every week. This week, the Seahawks are playing the Rams on Monday night, which means that we got to get somebody from St. Louis. We got Heath Lynch from St. Louis as the guest host on the show this week. I'm very, very excited about it. So
that'll be good.
I am super stoked. So
it won't be a good game, but that'll be a good episode. Get off
dude,
my running
the crazy thing about the Rams is that they play the Seahawks hard, and they always have.
But I mean, with Sam Bradford out.
Oh, that's true. That ACL is blown. Not to mention the Cardinals are in the World Series, so we might get into a little bit of baseball talk as well. So.
Oh, well, then I won't be doing
It'll just be in the put the guest host on the grill segment. So anyway, that's baldmove.com. Go to baldmove.com and be baldmove.com. Also, if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on the baldmove.com Facebook page. We're also on the Personal Arrogance Facebook page. Find us at both. You can write us an email, personalarrogance@gmail.com. You can send us a voicemail at 360-362-0024, or you can follow us on Twitter at Personal Podcast. Guys, also, if you really want to help us out, help more arrogance get into this fold, please rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't done so already. That helps us out a ton. It helps us move up those iTunes rankings and helps spread the word about the show and make this rich, rich Personal Arrogance community even richer. I love you guys, and I love hearing from you, and I just want to hear from you more. So please get in touch with us, guys. Let's move on to the Facebook Roundup. Another way that you get in touch with us on Facebook, each week we post, say we're recording tonight and we want to know what you want to hear us talk about. And this is what happens. Tanner Barfield says, can Jesse talk about the differences between top and bottom fermenting? Also, I put a little Easter egg in this post this week. I said, if you were to name a pet marsupial, which marsupial would it be and what should we name it? Just to make sure you guys are actually reading these posts. So anyway, Tanner Barfield says, can Jesse talk about the differences between top and bottom fermenting? Also, name the marsupial Mr. and Mrs. Hot Pocket, which I love because they have pockets. Jesse, top and bottom fermenting, go.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Top fermenting is ale yeast, and it ferments warmer. Lager yeast sits at the bottom. I think it's just because when it's cooler, the yeast drops down and mm-hmm. does its stuff down there, as opposed to warmer yeast. So, like, yeast that ferments warmer releases esters, which is part of the flavor profile, especially the aforementioned Belgians that have like banana flavor, bubble gum, or clove, or whatever. That's all produced by the yeast fermenting warm, and it sits on top as it does it. Whereas lager yeast is colder and slower, and sits on the bottom. And the reason you make a Hefeweizen with top fermenting yeast is because it needs to be an ale, and it needs those delicious fruity esters to complete the flavor profile.
And when you say esters, you mean the shit and pee of yeast. Because that's what we're all drinking.
Alcohol is the shit and pee of yeast.
No, alcohol is the pee of yeast, and carbonation is the farts of yeast. But I think when we're talking about esters, we're probably talking about the direct shit of yeast.
Well, I think esters are just like I asked someone who's better at science than me and said that esters are just like related to alcohol.
Oh, interesting.
It's very similar, like on a molecular level.
I was wondering if it was more like the armpit sweat of yeast.
It smells like farts sometimes. you get that.
Yeah. Anyway, Jacob Jones Martinez, love you, from the Martinez clan, says, can we get links to the Reddit on Reddit/Wikipedia segments? Which would be a great idea, and I will definitely take that into account as we post these episodes. Jonathan Drow says, favorite American president, Jesse, go.
Woodrow Wilson.
I'm going to go FDR. So we got World War I and World War II covered there.
There you go.
All right. Diane Wilson says, Jesse's sister had a wombat named Daphne and a possum named Petal. Both are good names for a couple of very cute marsupials. Diane Wilson, what a beautiful lady.
Yeah, thanks, Mom.
And a mother of Jesse.
That's true.
Dennis Kleinbeck.
And perennial dedication hero.
Yeah, and listener from the first episode. Loyal listener. Also, Diane Wilson in the Personal Arrogance Hall of Fame. For sure.
Congratulations.
Dennis Kleinbeck from Germany, love you, Dennis, says, a sugar glider named Bob or a koala with the same name. So, sugar glider named Bob or a koala named Bob for a marsupial. He says, also, does this represent the Great American Beer Fest in the right way? There is an amazing video of Triumph the Insult Comic Dog at the Great American Beer Fest. I would really highly recommend everybody watch it. And I loved every minute of it.
So. Yeah, I loved it too. I've never been to the GABF, so I can't answer that. But I've been to a lot of beer festivals, and yeah, it's a lot of that. I would hate to be filmed when I was at a beer festival. Because I'm usually a sloppy mess.
Yeah, but you record it every week at basically a beer festival called the Personal Arrogance Podcast.
This is... You haven't seen me at a beer festival. I get...
I have. It's Strange Brew.
Yeah. Was I drunk when you saw me?
I don't think so.
Okay, yeah.
It's hard to get drunk on, like, jalapeno beer.
Yeah, it's true. That's Strange Brew is the worst place to get drunk at. Yeah. Although a friend of the show, Mars, did give me some of his bootleg hooch.
Hey, now.
Just to warm me up. But yeah, like at Father's Day Fest and at a Cast Fest, I can get pretty shitty.
All right. Well, James Patterson says, best Wikipedia article. Seriously, read about Witold Pilecki. How is it not a major motion picture based on him? Did you read about this guy?
No, I haven't heard about
this. So Witold Pilecki is a Polish guy who helped found basically the Polish Secret Service during World War II. Mm-hmm. And he volunteered to infiltrate Auschwitz.
No way.
Yeah. So he went inside Auschwitz basically to, and then set up an intelligence network within Auschwitz, which is crazy. And then survived Auschwitz himself after setting up an intelligence network, which not only did intelligence, but also did stuff like supply drops and stuff that they could actually get supplies into Auschwitz and just crazy like stuff. Like read his Wikipedia, it's insane. And then when after World War II, when the Soviet Union took over, he was captured, tried, and killed.
Oh
yeah. By the Soviet
Union. What?
It's an insane story. I would really recommend reading it. And then for the marsupial, he says, holy crap, bandicoots are a real animal. And I checked it. Yes, they are. Allagash bandicoot, and call it Allie for short.
There you go.
Love it. And then finally, Anthony Pangilinan says,
you
have you guys heard of the D-Box theaters? I just watched Gravity in D-Box 3D, and that's the way to watch it. D-Box?
I have no idea what this is.
All right, I'm going to look it up here. So D-Box is D-Box Technologies. Oh, this is a Wikipedia page. Canadian technology, which designs, manufactures, and markets motion systems intended mainly for the entertainment and industrial simulation markets. So basically, it's like Star Tours, but you're watching a movie, which would be the best way to watch Gravity. Selected movie theaters in North America and internationally are equipped with D-Box motion systems. The first feature film to have been encoded with D-Box was Fast and Furious, released April 3rd, 2009.
All right.
Since then, there have been many releases that have ranked number one at the box office. The Renfrew Street Glasgow branch of the UK cinema Cineworld was the first cinema in the UK to introduce D-Box technology. Six further cinemas with the Cineworld chain have purchased D-Box seats. This sounds awesome. I would love to. Like, Star Tours is my favorite ride at Disneyland, so I want to do D-Box. I'm going to find where the closest one is to us, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah, you should do that. Sounds like you'd have fun.
Beat spending $75,000 to look at a dark sky and a curved earth.
No, it doesn't.
All right. Well, with that, Jesse, let's move on to recommendations and call it a cast. What's your first reco?
My first recommendation is... I forgot to do them. Oops.
Perfect.
Sorry.
My first reco this week is going to be the All Songs Considered podcast from NPR. I know it's mainstream because it is NPR, but a lot of people have asked on the show about music or about albums we're listening to, and I felt like I was getting into a rut. And then this weekend, my wife and I took a road trip up to Bellingham, and she played me the All Songs Considered podcast, and it's a great way to listen to new music. It's really good stuff. And it introduced me to a lot of really great albums that are coming out. So the All Songs Considered podcast, I would give it a thumbs up.
Cool.
Have you thought of a Seco Reco?
No, go ahead.
All right, my Seco Reco will be Breaking Bad on Netflix. I'm obsessed with this shit. I'm going to finish the show right now, and then I'm going to go watch an episode.
Yeah.
But the thing about this is, like, I cannot imagine trying to watch the show in episodic form because they leave you on such a fucking huge Sylvester Stallone-esque cliffhanger every single episode. And I would tear my hair out trying to stay sane and follow the series. Like, I cannot, like, I blazed through season one through season four and a half in a couple weeks. Like, I could not wait for a long time for each of these shows. So if you haven't watched Breaking Bad, it is an amazing, amazing show. Season three is really where it becomes insanely great. And I've been watching and following Mad Men for a while now, but Breaking Bad is definitely one of the most entertaining shows that I've ever watched. So I'm sure,
yeah,
if you're a ball
get into
movie.
It once I finish Frasier.
Yeah, probably a good call. Very
I don't
similar.
Like season 7 of Frasier is crazy. They made a lot of shows.
Fair. It's very similar to Frasier. An intellectual. His, basically Marty is Jesse, and
no, Niles is Jesse. Walter is Frasier.
All right.
Marty is Tuco.
Marty's Tuco? Uh-huh. And what's the name of the dog?
Eddie?
Yeah, Eddie is Gus. All right.
Perfect.
I'm sure if you've listened to the Bald Move Network, you've watched Breaking Bad, but I cannot.
That's what I'm
going to
be. I'm going to be
so
Niles Crane as a crystal methamphetamine cook for Halloween.
Good idea. All right, Jesse, that's a show, man.
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay in touch with us. Once again, write us an email, personalarrogance@gmail.com. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 360-362-0024. This show only gets better when you, the listener, are a part of it. And until next time, remember that wherever you go,
whatever you do,
please Stay arrogant.
Arrogant. Get off my back.